This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Anthony Herron, Score football analyst.
You know what? Brad Pitt, you're a good actor. You're a movie star. You're more of a movie star than a great actor. And that's okay, because you're in really good movies and I enjoy them.
Former NFL defensive lineman and Iowa Hawkeye.
And as long as that ends up being the case, hey, Bishop, I'm still on the radio.
No, it's all right. He can hang.
Paw Patrol.
I need another Paw Patrol.
Okay, I'm going to come turn it on in just a couple of moments, all right?
Big Ann Herron.
Mr. Herron, I want to compliment you. You're doing a fine job.
With Bernstein and Holmes on The Score.
Anthony Herron is here. Football was here last night, and it was fine. That absolutely served its purpose to, if nothing else, it was like an amuse-bouche. It was just one of those, you know, little appetizer that they bring it over.
That was a very Duke word you used.
It means, you know, fun in the mouth. And yeah. they bring it over.
Tasty little morsel.
Yes, they're like, thank you. This is so nice. What is this? This is the chef's pickled radishes or something like that. It turned out to be some entertaining football. What did you think?
I would have liked a bit more defense, but yes, it was entertaining for what it was. There's no doubt. It was nice that you guys had Colin Johnson on, and it was a big night for him. When you look at the statistics of his career, three seasons in, he's kind of gotten less and less run year over year throughout his brief time in the NFL so far. But last night, I mean, the Colin Johnsons of the world is what last night was about. The Brett Rippins of the world, that's what last night was about. And both guys showed up, showed out. I mean, on the kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, you had Khalil Herbert, who's a proven commodity as a runner in the NFL, and he's done it against great defenses in big moments. We know he's talented with the ball in his hands, so him dominating Houston's backups doesn't mean nearly as much, but it is like, oh, okay, that's the best player on the field right there. Look at him with the football. So at least it's a little proof of concept, I guess, but for Rippin, for Johnson, there's guys out there who were doing things that, especially for Johnson, now this will become an additional look from the Bears coaches. Not that he's going to break into the lineup unless a bunch of guys get hurt. He's not going to be a pass catcher for the Bears this season, but they at least now look at him and say, what can we do with him? Well, you know, all right, so we've seen the frame and we've seen him on the practice field. He's had some moments. Now this is in game action against opponents. Oh, maybe there's a role for him. Can he be some, you know, in this newly sort of revamped kickoff return unit? Can he be a guy out there? Can he be someone who's able to cover kickoffs? Can he be someone who can be on the punt team in some capacity? Let's look for a role because he's out here making plays.
I think the answer to that's yes. Why not? Yes.
I mean, we'll see. He'll get the opportunity. Richard Hightower will give him the opportunity, and he'll have to prove it. At 6'6", 225 or whatever, you know, he probably not going to be a gunner on your punt coverage team, but can he be a protector, like your end or wing kind of position, and then go down there and tackle somebody? Maybe he's got zero interest in tackling. Who knows? But he'll
from
get
last
the
night,
opportunity.
It seems like he seems like he's into it.
Can he be Equanimeous St. Brown at the least?
Right.
Right?
Right. Can he be a guy who now is so many of the receiver cores in recent years from the Bears have had a bunch of specialists. Now you got real pass catchers. You got real versatile playmakers outside. You're not going to need as many specialists, but it'll be nice to have an EQ-type guy. Equanimeous St. Brown, the thing he was best at, the thing the Bears utilized him at a high level, was to say, when that guy's out there, everybody knows he's not going to do anything but block, and they still can't get around him. Let's throw the bubble screen to his side. He's just going to mow people over. Can Colin Johnson be that? And then occasionally make a catch in a game here and there. That could be a role he carves out now.
When you're trying to handicap what would be who's going to be the backup quarterback, what does last night do for that, if anything?
Are we mushing Tyson Bagent in the face already?
We're doing it.
I think, I suppose in a similar fashion to the Colin Johnson conversation, because Brett Rippin has been on a bunch of rosters. He's a much more experienced pro quarterback than Tyson Bagent.
And he looks like it.
I mean, the mechanics of the position are what you hope for. Now, the physical attributes are going to have some limitations versus, you know, the top players in the sport. But he's out there. I mean, his first series he was out there, I'm looking at him and jotting down a couple of notes. Like, all right, I like the pocket presence. Now, he played a bunch of ball. There are some corollaries between he and Tyson Bagent. Tyson Bagent didn't play college football at nearly as high a level as Brett Rippin did. Brett Rippin played at a Group of Five program, played at Boise State. I was talking about this a little bit last night after the game was over.
His arm is better, though.
Well, sure. Yeah, and that's a part of the reason he was a higher-level recruit. Yeah. He broke all of Kellen Moore's high school records in the state of Washington, and then he followed up to Boise State and broke a bunch of his passing records at Boise State as well. So he's an accomplished quarterback, but there are, for Brett Rippon, some physical limitations that make it a little bit difficult for him to stay in the lineup and sustain a certain level of success on the field. But seeing that last night and looking at the comfort he had out there under some level of duress, not wasn't the duress of having Myles Garrett trying to take your head off or anything, but he climbed the pocket, he kept his eyes down the field, and there's a reason he wasn't here throughout the offseason. He was competing overseas somewhere and doing something, some league somewhere. So, he's played more recently than some of the other guys who were on the field with him. But he got the opportunity, got a bunch of reps, got a bunch of snaps, and frankly, most of the incompletions he had were still balls that hit the hands of the wide receiver. So he was very impressive.
I want to walk through your mind a little bit.
Okay.
I know it's a dangerous place.
It's big. It's cavernous.
I want to know, as you're watching, as you're digesting what the new kickoff rules are, what are the things that you were like, I wonder if this happens. I wonder if this happens. What was happening while you were watching it take place?
I'm wondering how the coverage team, in a similar fashion to what on a standard defensive snap of football, how this new version of the kickoff cover team will try to overload certain areas of the kickoff coverage, because there are certain alignments that you have to be in by rule, and then, of course, you can't move prior to the snap. You got both guys, both sides 5 yards apart, foot's on the line. But then when the returner actually has the football or has an opportunity to field the ball, is there an opportunity, almost like a stunt in the front seven, to overload the kickoff coverage team where you
like
have
a trap
the,
play.
Exactly. Where you have
where
sort of
you
a
pull somebody around.
Right. And a coffin corner sort of kick where Greg Coffin Corner Coleman, the old Minnesota Vikings punter. But you put the ball towards the corner near the end zone, and you kick it within, within the green zone between the 0 and the 20, and have your coverage overload in that direction. So once the ball has an opportunity to get fielded, you stunt in that direction, whether it's a slant, whether it's a follow stunt, something to that effect. And then it would be very difficult for the blockers on the kick return unit to try and stick with that, because now they have to fold behind their teammates to try and get an opportunity to actually make a block.
Unless they're fast enough to chase it down from behind.
Well, right, and then you're talking angles.
Right.
Can you actually get there to make that block at the proper angle before the coverage team is going to field it? So that's a part of what, we saw Hightower tinkering around with a few things. You got Torrey Taylor's first snap in the National Football League in the preseason. He's putting his little finger on the football out there so it can be kicked. There was no reason to do that last night necessarily, but all right, let's sort of test this out. But I think the way that kicks are covered within the confines of that 5 yard separation, what kind of almost like defensive snap style stunts can you run to say, we're going to pin this unit back here inside the 20? I think we'll start to see some of that in the regular season.
All right, all the caveats about everything that are understood. Is this offense more normal, for lack of a better term? Is it more of one of where receivers actually go down the field, where running backs get the ball and go forward?
Let's hope so.
Okay.
I think a lot of that, even conceptually, comes down to the execution of the quarterback, the execution of the offensive line. But schematically, yes, we will see bodies that go forward.
Good. That's good. Forward's good.
On offense, that is the preference, to actually move forward. Preferably the people with the football move forward,
even
or move
better
forward with an opportunity to grab the football from the sky when that chance is there. That's one of the things, even with Colin Johnson, the very first time he touched the football, he dropped it on an excellent pass from Brett Rippon. But I like the response from that point forward, though. But now, even with a guy like Colin Johnson, that's where you wonder, what are the limitations within that? Because, if he's running over the middle, he's got a crossing route or a dig route, and there's bodies around him, does he have the concentration to make that grab? First opportunity he had, says no. But outside the numbers, using that 6'6", 225, and going up to get some contested grabs, that seems to be what he specializes in. But within this offense, whether it's off of play action or, just off of some levels concepts, you will need the ability. And this is where Caleb Williams, it's, I guess, one of the underappreciated parts of, so many aspects of his game that are adequately appreciated, but he does have the ability to layer the football. He can turn the nose over in a very rapid manner. That's one of those things where, as a quarterback, Or you're going to fit it behind the linebacker and in front of the safety. You need to be able to do that at a high level and sometimes in a very rapid manner. Caleb can do that. And so to have a DJ Moore, Keenan Allen is exceptional in that regard. Cole Kmet has gotten better in that regard throughout his career. Where when you have multiple defenders in front and behind you converging at the point of impact and knowing that at the apex, you know, of the ball, of the flight, that you still have to go up and make a physical contested grab, you have some Bears players who've now shown the ability to do that. Caleb Williams will need to be able to fit it in there and know that he's taking a risk. I heard you talking the other day about some of the interceptions in practice and sort of being okay with that. And I agree with that as a point, because he's got to continue to figure out in the NFL, where can he fit that in and which playmaker can he most trust to try and fit that pass in, a very similar type of ball to the one that Brett Rypien threw to Colin Johnson on that first one that was incomplete.
When it comes to Caleb Williams, and now, you know, the Hall of Fame stuff is over for the Bears. They can kind of get back to what would be a new normal preseason in the NFL. What happens now? Like, because there wasn't game action, which made sense. Mm-hmm. What happens now as they get into preseason game two, which is really preseason game one?
It does seem that sort of every phase along the way here, and I'm answering your question. I got this new enormous phone, and I don't know if I muted it adequately. Yes, it is muted. The plan that's been in place for Caleb every step of the way, it does seem like they've procedurally been able to stick with some version, some form of how they want to sort of ramp him up, to have the ability even before the draft to begin to sort of feed him some plays, and then after the draft to make sure that his QB coach is you know, sort of invested in what the Bears' offensive philosophy is and talking the Bears' language with Caleb. And then even here, you get into the preseason phase. Our first game, we got four of them. Don't need to see you play any snaps in game. I like the fact that he was even out there in warmups last night and just going through that, getting some muscle memory where week by week there's going to be less that feels odd to him. There's going to be less that feels
less like, new.
Yeah. Just sort of, you know, peeling away the newness as you head toward the regular season. So between now and game number two, there's no reason to think he won't play. Who is it? Buffalo they have next week. There's no reason to think he won't play against the Bills. And so between now and then, it's watching the film from last night. Here's some live action. Here's the concepts we've been discussing. Look at Brett Rypien, execute this and that. He's got a lot of stuff he can learn from Tyson Bagent. Let's see how they ran these concepts. And
then
now that he's on the film room, those can be some of the mental reps that you want him to have. Then you get out there in game action, and there's something to try to execute from there. But I do think he should play. I believe he will play in preseason game number two. And you know, it's not going to be a half a football or anything, but you want him to get within the offensive system and begin to be able to have Shane Waldron in his ear, be able to call these plays in the huddle. Talked to Ryan Day last week in Indianapolis at Big Ten Football Media Days, and talked to Lincoln Riley as well. You know, looking at the progression from Ryan Day as a coach, from having Justin Fields as a quarterback to C.J. Stroud as a quarterback, Ryan Day adjusted the way that he coached from Justin Fields to C.J. Stroud to have C.J. Stroud more prepared as he entered the National Football League. Ryan Day's told me about that multiple times. Lincoln Riley, the verbiage that's there within his system, there's not a lot of it for a quarterback. We've heard so much about the most difficult aspect of Caleb's transition right now is the verbiage, is the cadence, is the play calling. The more opportunities he gets to do that under not just the physical duress after the ball gets snapped, but the mental duress, the emotional duress in game action and looking in the huddle and knowing a bunch of other grown-ups are counting on you to kind of get this right within all this stuff that you're consuming for the first time and trying to spit back out for the first time. Those are going to be very important opportunities for him to actually do that in game action. And so I think, yes, for him, I wouldn't have minded if he played a bit last night, but I'm not going to hammer anybody for it not happening. But I think over the next few weeks, you want as much of that to become muscle memory as possible in game.
Speaking of looking around the huddle and looking at a bunch of grownups, Keith Byard had brought up something. Kevin Byard, why did I say Keith Byard? He brought up something
about Keith Byers back in the day.
Right, that's why.
Right, yeah.
He brought up something that Caleb Williams had done at House Hall that he thought showed tremendous leadership, and that was asking guys to, you know, clean up after themselves. Amani Toomer was on earlier today with the Carton Show. And he gave what I thought was a bit of a bizarre response to that.
He's Russell Wilson 2.0.
Uh-oh.
This is not going to go over well.
Uh-oh.
If you came in the locker room, I've been in this locker room for 8 years, like you said. And you know, some rookie's going to come in who hasn't played one snap.
Right.
Talking, you know, we're wearing the fingernail polish. You know, now he's going to come in here and tell me, who've been here, who've been through the struggle, that I need to clean up? No, how about rookie? How about you clean up after me?
Right.
How about that? Don't give me this crap. I don't like it at all. I feel like rookies should earn their respect.
Sure.
Just because you got drafted number one doesn't mean nothing to me because I don't even know if you're good.
Oh, blow it out your ass. Come on. Clean up.
I don't have to clean up. It's my room, Dad. Well, I own the house. I don't care. It's still my room. You got to respect my privacy. I don't have to clean up if I don't want to.
So you said doesn't have like one messy room? Like just one room he was allowed as a kid to just kind of get junky in?
There's a lot of stuff in there, including some dog whistle stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you get into the, not only should he not tell me to clean up, but he should be cleaning up after me because you're a vet player. How does this go?
I mean, I'm confident he is not alone in that train of thought. Conceptually feeling like a rookie comes in, they should be seen and not heard. They shouldn't be trying to tell me what to do. And frankly, I don't 100% disagree with the concept of earning your stripes as a rookie. Don't come in thinking you can boss everyone around. But within the context of the Caleb scenario here, that's not how anyone in the Bears locker room, at least, has publicly admitted that they're perceiving anything he's doing about the way he's carried himself so far.
This is not a six-round running
back. This is your quarterback.
This is the quarterback of the team.
And he went on even later in that segment to talk about, you know, Eli Manning. Hey, I love you, Eli, but you know, kind of the quarterbacks being on a pedestal and things like that.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think that part of it, you know, Abadi is trying to have a little bit of fun with it while at the same time, you know, you mentioned some of the dog whistle stuff.
Yeah, the finger. What do you care about his fingernails for?
It shouldn't matter. He shouldn't care about it. It would surprise me, even a Monty Toomer, for everything I know about him, that feels like a big deal to him. He's a bit of a, you know, fashionista type. He kind of went all in with his name being Armani and then the nickname, well-dressed Armani. He kind of leaned into that a little bit throughout his career. So I'd be surprised if he really cares that much about the fingernails, but the concept of Caleb Williams potentially coming in and trying to like run the locker room, we're getting more and more of a sense that that's an outdated view of who Caleb Williams might be. This is a guy in a Monty Toomer who's out of town. He's on some, you know, national talk show, just kind of running off at the mouth a little bit. But there's no indications of anything about Caleb that we've seen in Chicago to this point that would indicate he's trying to be some jerk in the Bears locker room. Asking guys to clean up, I would imagine he did it in a remarkably polite way and just pointed out to guys. I mean, his teammate was the one who even went public with it, and Byard didn't have any issue with it at all. So I think we can trust the source.
And they used it as an example of leadership. Positive leadership.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, so there's no reason to think that anyone in the locker room took issue.
Right, that's a veteran all-pro.
Who is currently teammates with Caleb, yes. So, I mean, you know, I don't put a lot of stock into what Imani Toomer has to say about Caleb or what's going on in the Bears locker room. If we start to see something that feels like it's a fracture or a fissure or anything like that, then I think it's worth paying attention to. But at the moment, everybody in the Bears locker room seems to be rooting for Caleb to succeed and to, you know, sort of, you know, be a part of this Bears community. All the guys in the locker room are rooting in the same way for Caleb. DJ Moore has even talked about as much essentially this week. Yes, Justin Fields is his guy, will always be, but this is his current quarterback. He's going to do it. He was out there warming up with Caleb on the field last night. DJ Moore didn't need to warm up before the Hall of Fame game, but he's just out there supporting Caleb while that's happening. So, I mean, he at the moment seems to have the full support of everybody in the locker room, despite the fingernails being painted.
Speaking of DJ Moore, he gets his contract extension, the largest contract extension in Bears history. They didn't have to do this. Why did they do it?
It's another really good example from Ryan Poles of taking care of guys who are doing it the way they want it done. Now, I don't think he's trying to send the message that every personality in the locker room needs to be exactly the same, that everyone needs to be kind of quote-unquote choir boy type. But, you know, Cole Kmet has gotten taken care of. Now DJ Moore has gotten taken care of. These are not only high-level football players, but high-level people, high-level representatives of the locker room. And they've been exceptional in the midst of Bears' struggles in their time in Chicago also, and the Bears have been willing to take care of them in that regard. Sure, Jalen Johnson, there was some back and forth with that before that contract got done, but Jalen earned his money. He got paid his money as well. And even the structure of some of these deals that in some ways could be viewed as team-friendly, like getting DJ Moore done now as opposed to a year or two from now,
yes,
it saves the Bears some money. Getting Jalen Johnson done with a lot of guaranteed money, but then getting him back to the market sooner, it's beneficial to Jalen Johnson. The annual salary didn't reset the market, but the guaranteed percentage of his contract reset the market. So there's a lot of creativity and nuance to me to the way that Ryan Poles is not only sort of leading the team, but handling the contracts with players as well. I feel like DJ Moore is just kind of the latest example of that, of not just saying like, here's your slot, here's your money, we don't think it's time yet, take it or leave it, but finding a lane that has really suited both sides in several different examples here that I find pretty impressive.
That's Big Anthony Heron on the Bernstein and Holmes Show here on this Friday. We're out a little early today for Cubs baseball. Are we going to get ready to run through a wall in the next segment?
Yeah, and I was just to fact check, you played for Rod Marinelli, right?
Oh, no. Okay. He got there after I left Detroit.
All right, okay, good. Because I was like, I thought he did, but he did not. Yeah, Rod Marinelli is going to get everyone ready to play ball in the next segment. You don't want to miss it. It's next here on The Score.
You're listening to Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2. Your midday destination for Chicago sports talk on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
It's football, mister.
Anthony Heron's going to stick around for another segment because I don't know if you've been listening to Mully and Haw for the last couple of days, but they have just been at like a football amusement park.
Living the life in Canton.
It's an amusement park. It's just guys in gold jackets, and it's one of those things where it's sort of our rule at the Super Bowl, or it's generally what they say the rule when you live in L.A. If you see somebody and you wonder, is that? The answer is yes.
Probably is.
Yeah, it probably is. Like somebody picking up their laundry or somebody getting pastrami at the deli. Is that really? Yeah, it probably is. So they were one of the people that they were able to talk to amid all of this as they're paying homage to the Hall of Famers and enjoying the game was former Bears defensive coordinator Rod Marinelli, who is he's coached a lot of greats.
Mm-hmm.
He has he's been around the game forever. We know how deeply connected he is with the defense that the Bears still run to this day.
He is one of the most respected defensive line coaches in the history of the NFL.
And he also did some, as far as film work, was a pioneer of splicing in. He was doing that sort of before it was cool when he was using
stuff from like Gladiator and
nature
Rocky
videos and all that, watching like a lion take down a zebra to show proper form, I guess. So Rod Marinelli was on with Mully and Haw, and he talked about coaching great players like Julius Peppers and Warren Sapp.
All those guys that would work in the position should demand effort. That's something I just believe from day one. And the demanding of effort starts in practice. And I just think that work habit and doing those type of things every day, if not every other day, is every day. And you get the habits of really being special. And the coach has got to demand that he gets every ounce of production that matches his talent. You have to do that. When a guy leaves you, if he's got something left, that's on the coach. And it's just so important. I mean, that's with Warren, with these guys, when their production matches their talent, I feel good. And so, all of a sudden, a guy could say it's a great year. The media say great year. I look at the tape and I say it's not a great year. They're letting somebody else evaluate you, and you have to put cotton in your ears and go do your work.
It's a coach's job to make production match talent.
Hold on, because we have another example of this. Mm-hmm. And it's not that weird that you would hear that from Rob Marinelli, especially when you think about what Mike Tomlin said about it.
I love to hear coaches resist the responsibility of coaching.
What'd you just say, coach?
I love coaches that resist the responsibility of coaches, that talk negatively about a dude that can't learn and blah, blah. Man, if everybody could learn, we need less coaches.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? If the group didn't need management, then we wouldn't make as much. Yep. I love reading draft evals and somebody's talking about anything other than pedigree. Talking about how poor somebody's hand usage is. Well, that's coaching. Mm. I don't run away from coaching. I run to coaching.
Love it.
It all is in line with that not seeking comfort. Because when you're a coach that's talking about somebody can't learn, you're seeking comfort because your teaching is struggling.
Yeah.
Mm. Amen. Amen, Mike Tomlin. Amen, Rob Marinelli. You guys know I'm when I see the raw physical traits of a player at any individual position, then my expectation is that there is development that is capable with that player, whether it is at quarterback or defensive line or anywhere else. And yes, there will sometimes be learning deficiencies, perhaps, with certain individual players, or the body mechanics of how they move perhaps don't suit the development at a certain position. But you know, a guy like Leonard Floyd, who he was around like the same time I started doing a bunch of work here at the station. Mm-hmm. Leonard Floyd was the top 10 pick
that
the
Bears have traded bend.
For. An exceptional bend as a pass rusher. And then comes here when the Bears just needed a great pass rusher because they didn't have any. He was immediately kind of thrown into the fire of, you got to save this Bears pass rush. He was not prepared for it. He was not developed in a way that suited that. Then he leaves here and has a bunch of double-digit sack seasons. Is that Leonard Floyd's fault? Is that the Bears defensive staff who's in place at that point in time? Is it his position coach's fault? There's a lot of different factors within that. But Leonard Floyd, since leaving Chicago, has developed into an exceptional defensive player with the double-digit sack numbers. Now, he is still, at this point, not one of the most feared pass rushers in football, but he's become immensely productive since he left the Chicago Bears, and there's other examples that you could utilize for something along those lines. Mike Tomlin, of course, is now the coach of Justin Fields, who famously was here in Chicago for the last few seasons. What would the development arc of Justin Fields look like in Pittsburgh versus what it is here in Chicago? It's something that'll be fun to sort of look at, to track and discuss, just, you know, for those of us who feel like there's still a lot of exceptional potential that could be achieved in Justin Fields. But coaches in general, the best in the business view themselves as football teachers. How do I teach this person to execute their position? How do I coax the most out of this team to put them in position to be at their best as a collective unit? The physical traits might be there. The attitude traits might be there. They might work their tails off. And if you can combine all those different things together, then you have an opportunity as a coach to get the most out of an individual player. And the resume of the coach is out there on the film. Any quality coach will tell you that what's on film is their resume, because when it comes down to it, they can lead the meeting room however they like. They can do the practice drills and, you know, yell or not yell at everybody in the world. But then when the players are out there between the white lines, that's the resume of the coach. That's what they've been taught to do. You've either taught them to do that or you're not teaching them well enough to do something different. And every good coach recognizes that what the people are seeing when the ball gets snapped, that's their resume of what they've actually led the players into.
Who is the most impressive person you talked to at Big Ten Media Days?
It was fun talking to Lincoln Riley. Actually, when I'm on tonight, I'm going to have Alex Kuhn play back some of the discussion I had with Lincoln Riley about Caleb, because Lincoln is a guy, as a coach, who's had a wide variety of number one overall picks and Heisman Trophy winners and Heisman finalists in the time that he's been a head coach. And famously, Caleb is the most recent example of that. So in addition to talking to him about, and actually part of the reason I'm wearing my Big Ten Network shirt today is because all these West Coast teams, today is the day it's official. We're now Oregon and UCLA and USC and Washington. They're all officially members of the Big Ten at this point, even though we've been talking about it for years. Today is the day it's actually a thing. They're actually officially in the Big Ten Conference as of this day.
Is there an initiation ceremony?
That happened in Indianapolis last week.
I just wonder if it's like a maid guy in the mob. They hold up a card and there's a candle or whatever.
Exactly. Every individual head coach was on a chair and we all held them up, hoisted them over our heads. They were singing and dancing. Yeah, there was some glass breaking, everything.
Do you happen to know where UCLA is?
I've heard it's in Los Angeles.
You may not know.
That is. I'm aware of that fact. It is located in L.A.
That would make sense with the UC and then L.A. part.
University of California, Los Angeles.
Okay.
That's where it is.
All right. That's good to know. When we've talked about Illinois and we talked to our buddy Jeremy Warner about this, we've heard Josh Whitman say, we have to get above the cut line. You know, there's 18 teams. You got to get above the cut line.
Mm.
How does Illinois football program do that?
Now, the cut line will end up meaning a couple of different things, like in the future of the sport, as a lot of the power and influence in intercollegiate athletics continues to get consolidated toward the top between the Big Ten and the Southeastern Conference. Then within those two leagues, you may end up in a position where that influence and power gets consolidated toward the top of those tops. You know, like right now, football is the only sport that legitimately doesn't need the NCAA. Even hoops still needs the NCAA. And then once you get further and further away from what's now the Power Four structure, a bunch of other sports, even football in some of the other leagues, the conferences, the levels of the sport benefit from still having the NCAA. I think for the Illini, as good as Brad Underwood has been in basketball, that's huge for their athletic department. The baseball program has been really good as well. There's other individual non-revenue sports that have shown, you know, a level of excellence to varying degrees here over the last decade, let's call it. Football is in the midst of three seasons where Brett Bielema has been, in his first 3 years, one of the more successful coaches in Illini history through three seasons, and yet there's only one bowl game to show for that. And so now in this new era of college football, for the Illini to make sure that their athletic department will fit into the bigger structure, into the hierarchy in the way that they want to, then that's where Brett Bielema and the football program will have to take another step forward. And that's where coaching development, because the conversation around college football has turned into this idea that the haves and have-nots are going to continue to separate further and further from the pack. I still don't think that's the case. I do believe that coaching development will matter a bunch, even with the increases in scholarships and going from 85 scholarships to 105 scholarships is the conversation for what's likely about to happen here. When that does take place, you're still going to have limitations on the roster. There's still going to be talent that disperses all throughout the sport.
Because of opportunity.
Exactly.
They're not changing the number of starting roles in any sport.
Right.
The playing time is still going to be finite, and that's still going to drive decision-making on behalf of the players.
Brett Bielema and the Illini, Kirk Ferentz and the Hawkeyes, P.J. Fleck and the Minnesota Gophers. You may not be in a position where any of those coaches is able to have a collective that outbids everybody else for the top players in the sport, but there's still going to be quality players available to be developed by those programs, and to come in and have them, you know, earn an opportunity onto the field and then have an opportunity to win games when they get out there, then if Illinois can win at a slightly higher level moving forward than they have in football, then yes, being in the Big Ten Conference and having a successful program for the Illini, then they can be in that hierarchy where they want to be.
It's been a really interesting couple of weeks, like seeing the new and improved SEC and the new and improved Big Ten. It's wild to see some of the, like, just they put out the new video today. I don't know if you saw.
They put out the new map video. Yeah, everybody's been eagerly awaiting what this new Big Ten map and the map commercial is going to look like. It's one of the things Tony Petitti was joking about in Indianapolis last week, the new Big Ten commissioner. Well, a year on the job at this point, but a lot of folks have been asking about this map commercial, and they finally put out the new one with the LA, with the West Coast schools in it.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be quite the thing. I'm in mode, man. Like my experience in Dallas put me completely like in the mode of being ready for college football to come back, and by proxy, being ready for the NFL to come back. It was quite a thing. Like hearing some of the coaches down there and seeing what we had Big Ten on while you guys were down there talking to the coaches and seeing the kind of a Simply Line thing that they were doing with the coaches. I'm like,
there's so many of them, man. You got 18 coaches over 3 days, 54 players to talk to while they're all there. Like, it was a lot. I was doing it every day for Sirius XM, man. It was a marathon.
I swear, like, I looked up and I said to Dan, I was like, I was like, Brett Bielema was just talking, and now all of a
move
sudden.
Move him in, move him out. Get your football information, get him upstairs, and get him out of here.
It was like, Rota Boat is up there now. I'm like, what is going on?
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of them.
All right, so you're on tonight?
I am. On tonight from 6 to 9, back on tomorrow from 11 to 12:45 before the Cubs. Had a little Cubs drama last night. It'd be fun to kind of recap some of that. So, yeah, it's going to be a fun couple of days. Now that I'm back in the mix. Going to be out of the mix for a little bit. We're making the suburban move. But, yes, next time folks are here, it'll be tonight.
Off you go. No longer a city guy.
I showed up today, though, because Ray promised me a breakfast burrito. So, that's why I'm here.
It's on the way.
It's coming. That's Anthony Herron. We have High Noon next. I have an Olympic-related sponsorship deal that I don't quite understand.
I got the dopest MC ever.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High Noon?
The last High Noon of the week comes now. We discussed the Bears game, kind of game, and we talked to the Ken Mastroli Award winner for this game, Colin Johnson, Bears wide receiver, had a couple of touchdowns. It was just a terrific interview. What a nice, smart, fun young man, and he gave us a little scoop. He told us that the Hard Knocks cameras are going to be with him all afternoon and following him around. Sounds to me like storyline. Sounds like Hard Knocks introduction of a recurring character.
Sounds like they reacted to something to build their television show.
Uh-huh. Which not is planning it ahead of time and waiting for things to happen live, right?
I don't know. Are we sure that Hard Knocks didn't plan the Colin Johnson game last night?
You're right.
The Cubs won in exciting fashion in a way that had never been done before with extra base hits after two strikes.
You're right.
Together. Also, the White Sox have they haven't won in 25 calendar days, so they tied the second most ever longest streak of days without a win, and they have six more days to go to catch the 1899 Louisville Colonels at 31 days without a win.
You know I'm always on the forefront of who's spitting hot fire.
Of course.
Last week it was Trista Crick. This week, it's Reginald Bell Johnson. Woo!
When I was a baby, I was quiet as a mouse. You didn't even know there was a baby in the house. I just laid there cooing, kicking at the air. If I wasn't so cute, you wouldn't have noticed I was there. But when my bottom was wet and I wanted to be fed, I let out a yell that could wake the dead. And everybody came running from the favorite haunt, saying, give that baby anything it wants. So I learned my first lesson and I learned it well. If you want to get attention, yell. I say, sound off if your life is in traction. Sound off if you want to get a break. Sound off for a piece of the action. Sound off to get a piece of a cake. A one day daddy brought home a baby pup. The same would bark at midnight and we couldn't shut him up. We put him in the basement, we put him in the yard. Anywhere we put him, he would bark just as hard. Mama went and got him, brought him inside and wrapped him in the blanket, and still the bugger cried. He dapped no matter what you did or said, till he wound up sleeping at the foot of mama's bed. He might have been a puppy, but he wasn't no sap. To get what you want, you gotta yap.
Is that new?
No.
When was that from?
This is in like the 90s.
I was going to say, it's got kind of a like early, like Cool Moe Dee Curtis blow.
It's definitely not that.
But it's the pace of it and
he's riding the flow of main sources looking at the front door, which is the track that's playing behind him.
Was it Hannibal Buress that did the bit where he was hitting the drum and going, do,
hip hop started out in the park.
Yeah, but that's what it reminds me of.
Hip hop started out in the park. That style is a lot more like staccato.
Sugar though. Hill Gang.
No, I think that you're not giving Reginald Bell Johnson his props. Like, I actually think that he wrote that flow really well for a guy who's not a rapper.
Okay.
He wrote that flow really well. Put some respect on Carl Winslow's name.
Sorry. And what's the character's name from Die Hard? When he...
Officer...
Tries to fire down the Twinkie or...
Karkovice.
It's not Officer Karkovice.
Oh.
But then, of course, at the end, it climbed, after he accidentally shot a kid, oh, hooray, he's able to use his gun.
Sergeant Al Powell.
Powell? Like,
say that name 10 times fast. Jeez, Al Powell?
Al Powell. Okay, so there's an Italian gymnast named Giorgia Vila. And she's having...
She builds old houses?
No, not Bob Vila. It's Giorgia Vila. And she's part of Italy's national team. She's 21. She's from outside Milan. And she has a sponsor. And I don't understand. Some sponsorships make sense when you hire somebody to be an ambassador for your product, right? Because it helps get the word out for your product. And say, oh, there's a facial cleanser or a soft drink or something that needs you to raise its profile.
Yeah.
Her sponsor is Parmigiano Reggiano.
Hell yeah.
Now, she's pictured hugging giant wheels of cheese.
Clutching it.
Why in God's name does Parmigiano Reggiano, the unquestioned king of cheeses... They don't need an ambassador. They're Parmigiano Reggiano.
Maybe they just wanted to be an ambassador.
That may be. If they want to give money.
They wanted to connect themselves with some Olympic excellence.
That's fine, but you don't need that. You're Parmigiano Reggiano. Every chef in the world knows that you are the best at what you are forever, always will be, and that's that.
I think I can answer this. Because it's awesome. That's why.
Yes. Yeah, I know it's awesome, but are you competing with, like, Pecorino Romano?
No, all just of a because sudden? It's you're thinking too much about this, Dan. It's just awesome.
It's, why don't we do this? And how about this visual of our cheese?
But you don't
on
need
on the world
it.
Stage.
They're flexing on other cheeses is what they're doing.
I guess, because it's like, all right, hey, we're going to pay you to be an ambassador. Hey, I'm Giorgia Vila. Can I tell you about Parmigiano Reggiano? No, I know all about it. I know everything.
You know all about it?
Who doesn't know? Seriously?
So why else would they do it, Dan?
I don't know.
They don't want to increase their profile? There he is, folks. Dan Bernstein, man of the people.
They don't need to. They're Parmigiano Reggiano. They may be the best single thing on the planet.
And there's a person right now that didn't know that until you said it.
Who?
Us?
I didn't know.
See?
Come on.
Kids, just let those people out there get the word out about their cheese.
What is this Parmigiano Reggiano I've never heard of? I have to try it.
Man of the people.
That's High Noon. Fishy Business next. Kevin Fishbane.
Bernstein and Holmes. Middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
I'll be back this way on Monday. We'll settle this then. Right there, out in the street, in front of the Palace Saloon.
Yeah, right. When? High noon?
The last High Noon of the week comes now. We discussed the Bears game kind of game, and we talked to the Ken Mastroli Award winner for this game, Colin Johnson, Bears wide receiver, had a couple of touchdowns. It was just a terrific interview. What a nice, smart, fun young man, and he gave us a little scoop. He told us that the Hard Knocks cameras are going to be with him all afternoon and following him around. Sounds to me like storyline. Sounds like Hard Knocks introduction of a recurring character.
Sounds like they reacted to something to build their television show.
Uh-huh. Which not is planning it ahead of time and waiting for things to happen live, right?
I don't know. Are we sure that Hard Knocks didn't plan the Colin Johnson game last night?
You're right.
The Cubs won in exciting fashion in a way that had never been done before, with extra base hits after two strikes.
You're right.
Together. Also, the White Sox have they haven't won in 25 calendar days. So they tied the second most ever longest streak of days without a win, and they have six more days to go to catch the 1899 Louisville Colonels at 31 days without a win.
You know, I'm always on the forefront of who's spitting hot fire.
Of course.
Last week it was Trista Crick. This week, it's Reginald Bell Johnson. Woo!
When I was a baby, I was quiet as a mouse. You didn't even know there was a baby in the house. I just laid there cooing, kicking at the air. If I wasn't so cute, you wouldn't have noticed I was there. But when my bottom was wet and I wanted to be fed, I let out a yell that could wake the dead. And everybody came running from their favorite haunt, saying, give that baby anything he wants. So I learned my first lesson and I learned it well. If you want to get attention, yell. I say sound off if your life is in traction. Sound off if you want to get a break. Sound off for a piece of the action. Sound off to get a piece of the cake. One day daddy brought home a baby pup. The same would bark at midnight and we couldn't shut him up. We put him in the basement, we put him in the yard. Anywhere we put him, he would bark just as hard. Mama went and got him, brought him inside and wrapped him in the blanket, and still the bugger cried. He dapped no matter what you did or said, till he wound up sleeping at the foot of mama's bed. He might have been a puppy, but he wasn't no sap. To get what you want, you gotta yap.
Is that new?
No.
When was that from?
This is in like the 90s.
I was going to say, it's got kind of a like early, like Cool Moe Dee Curtis blow.
It's definitely not that.
But it's the pace of it and...
He's riding the flow of main sources looking at the front door, which is the track that's playing behind him.
Was it Hannibal Buress that did the bit where he was hitting the drum and going...
Hip-hop started out in the park.
Yeah, but that's what it reminds me
of. Hip-hop started out in the park. That style is a lot more like staccato.
Sugar Hill Gang.
No, I think that you're not giving Reginald Bell Johnson his props. Like, I actually think that he wrote that flow really well for a guy who's not a rapper.
Okay.
He wrote that flow really well. Put some respect on Carl Winslow's name.
Sorry, And what's the character's name from Die Hard? When he
officer
tries to fire down the Twinkie or
Karkovice.
It's not Officer Karkovice.
Oh,
but at, of course at the end of climb when he's after he accidentally shot a kid. Oh, hooray! He's able to use his gun.
Sergeant
again.
Al Powell.
Al Powell. Powell? Like, we have
say that name 10 times fast. Jeez, Al Powell?
Al Powell. Okay, so it's there's an Italian gymnast named Giorgia Vila. And she's having...
She builds old houses?
No, not Bob Vila. It's Giorgia Vila. And she's part of Italy's national team. She's 21. She's from outside Milan. And she has a sponsor. And I don't understand. Some sponsorships make sense. When you hire somebody to be an ambassador for your product, right? Because it helps get the word out for your product. And say, oh, there's a facial cleanser or a soft drink or something that needs you to raise its profile.
Yeah.
Her sponsor is Parmigiano Reggiano.
Hell yeah.
Now, she's pictured hugging giant wheels of cheese.
Clutching it.
Why... In God's name, does Parmigiano Reggiano, the unquestioned king of cheeses, they don't need an ambassador. They're Parmigiano Reggiano.
Maybe they just wanted to be an ambassador.
That may be. If they want
to
give money
to connect themselves with some Olympic excellence.
That's fine, but you don't need that. You're Parmigiano Reggiano. Every chef in the world knows that you are the best at what you are forever, always will be, and that's that.
I think I can answer this. Because it's awesome. That's why.
Yes. Yeah, I know it's awesome, but are you competing with, like, Pecorino Romano?
No, just because you're thinking too much about this, Dan. It's just awesome.
It's, why don't we do this? And how about this visual of our cheese?
But you don't need
it. On the world
it.
Stage.
They're flexing on other cheeses is what they're doing.
I guess, because it's like, all right, hey, we're going to pay you to be an ambassador. Hey, I'm Giorgia Vila. Can I tell you about Parmigiano Reggiano? No, I know all about it. I know everything.
You know all about it?
Who doesn't know? Seriously?
So why else would they do it, Dan?
I don't know.
They don't want to increase their profile? There he is, folks. Dan Bernstein, man of the people.
They don't need to. They're Parmigiano Reggiano. They may be the best single thing on the planet.
And there's a person right now that didn't know that until you said it.
Who?
Us?
I didn't know.
See?
Come on.
just let those people out there get the word out about their cheese.
What is this Parmigiano Reggiano I've never heard of? I have to try it.
Man of the people.
That's High Noon. Fishy Business next. Kevin Fishbane.